This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast. I'm your host, Arum. I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Let's start the show. This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast, and I'm excited to bring you today's guest, Mr. Addis Alamayu. Addis is the founder and managing partner of the Ethiopian-based advertising agency 251 Communications. He also sits on the board of the African Leadership Network and the Ethiopian American Business Forum. Addis, I gave just a very, very brief introduction, but I was wondering if you can take time and fill the bandits in so they get to know you a little bit better.
Thank you very much, actually, for having me on board, first of all. I was born in Ethiopia, left here when I was about seven or eight, grew up in Kenya, finished high school in the States, moved over to Canada, and then came back on vacation to Ethiopia in 2001 and never left. So it was just, you know, your typical immigrant story, except I decided to move back way before it was cool to move back to Ethiopia or, you know, back to Africa. The last 10 years or 15 years I've been here and, you know, done quite a bit of stuff. I worked for USAID for about 5.5 years, supporting Ethiopian exports to the U.S. And then during that also I dabbled in a little bit of business. I started the first English FM station in Ethiopia called Afro FM. And then about 5 years ago we launched 251 Communications in Ethiopia, and we're just actually launching a TV station at the end of the month in Ethiopia called Ghana TV as well. So, essentially, that's what I've been up to in the last couple of years.
Wow. That sounds really interesting. And so when you were gone for quite a bit of time, what motivated you to go back to Ethiopia?
I'll say this over and over again. I mean, for me, you know, it's different when you leave home from a very young age and get asked the same question no matter where you go. And so when I went back to Ethiopia and when I came here on vacation, I think it was in 2001, was the first time in a long time that nobody asked me that question. And that question was, where are you from? For me, that did it for me. I just, you know, if somebody's not asking you where you're from, it just means you belong there. So mine is an emotional move. It wasn't a business decision.
Wow. I think that's really interesting to hear, because most of the time you talk to entrepreneurs and it's a very calculated decision, but it's also nice to see that sometimes people are just fueled by passion, fueled by emotions. And so how did you come to start the radio station and then 251 Communications, what you're working on now?
The radio station, I mean, you know, I always believe that, you know, most businesses, like anywhere else, come from opportunities or challenges that one faces, right? So when I moved back to Ethiopia, there wasn't anything on the radio that I could listen to or people like myself, you know, could get into, which is English, you know, something that covered what we were looking at covering, stuff that we were interested in listening to. And Addis being the capital of Africa, because the AU and the, you know, the huge diplomatic community and the NGO community and now also the, you know, the huge expat business community coming in, I realized that there was nothing locally that they could listen to, just, you know, your basic drive to work sort of, you know, listening to something that around news, around what's going on in the city, what's going on around the world, and maybe a little bit of music and whatever. So I had an iPod when I first came, the first generation iPods, and then I plugged it in the car that I was sorted with in regards to the music. But when my iPod broke down on me, that's when I realized that, you know, I was facing the same issues that a lot of my friends were. So that's how the idea came about for Afro FM.
Interesting. And so did you always sort of have that entrepreneurship bug, or was that sort of the first time that you ventured off on your own?
No, I mean, you know, for me, I've always looked at opportunities. It's just the way I am. I'm not big on books, but I'm big on ideas. For me, I'm the kind of guy that sees opportunities from every single challenge. So, you know, I tell a lot of people when they move back home, whether it's here or Kenya or Nigeria or Ghana, wherever it is, you know, to carry a notepad with them or, you know, scribble it on their smartphones and spend about a month just immersing themselves in the country, in the city. And I guarantee you that when you're having discussions with people, Africans always like to complain about all the things they don't have and they wish they had, or the services. And every time somebody complains about something, it's just a business opportunity. That's the way you look at it. Because if somebody needs it, that means they're willing to pay for it if you're there to provide the services. It's not that complicated.
I think that's really good advice, is taking notes. Oftentimes we go through our days and we see problems and we say, okay, we'll just sort of put that in the back burner in our brains and come back to it later. But oftentimes you realize that the idea is no longer there. So I think that's really good advice on literally writing down what you're seeing, writing down the problems that people encounter on a daily basis. And what would you say is the biggest mistake that a lot of people from diaspora make when they're trying to start a business back home?
I think, like, in the Ethiopian context, people tend to copy what everybody else is doing. So, you know, I remember when I first moved here about 15 years ago, everybody was into renting construction machinery. Pretty decent money to be made out of it, but all of a sudden you had a glut of machinery because everybody just sent whatever they had. The hourly charge for a machine went from, I don't know, $5,000, $3,000 to about, $700, $800. So you got machines that are sitting around not doing anything. So I think for a lot of people, sort of, there's nothing like, you being on the ground and figuring out exactly what works for you specifically, rather than looking around and seeing what everybody else is doing and trying to copy that. I think that's imperative too. I think for a lot of folks, I don't believe in getting into a business because of the money, because if you do something with passion and you do it right and you provide the right service and the right product, the money is always going to come. But if you start off with, I'm going to make this much money by doing this, it usually doesn't work. So, I always try to tell people, use the resources that you have, the internal. I mean, everybody's got a God-given talent, so use that to build your business around it.
Yeah, I like what you're saying there, is talking about doing things for passion. I mean, it's a common theme that I've seen as I interview other entrepreneurs, is they say you have to get out of the mindset of wanting to make money, because there are really so many different ways to make money, but you have to follow something that you're passionate with so you actually can move past the challenges and move past the hurdles, because no matter what you're working on, there are going to be challenges that you haven't anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, I love what you do, man. I love coming to work. And, that's a beautiful thing, because, I know a lot of people, back in North America that are stuck in cubicles that hate what they do and hate where they are. So, for me, I feel blessed.
Yeah. And what are some of the biggest areas of opportunity that you see across Africa? I mean, I was looking at your Twitter and it just seems like you have a good grasp on a lot of African countries. So if you could go through just maybe a few countries and talk about some of the biggest areas of opportunity that you've noticed.
I mean, it all depends which region or which country, obviously. I mean, South Africa is way ahead of the rest of the continent, and the opportunities there, the challenges there are different from Nigeria or Ghana or Senegal, or, when you come to East Africa, Kenya is totally different from, Tanzania, Rwanda, or Burundi. I think services are, and the second thing is, obviously, it depends on how much resource you have to invest. If you have $10,000, obviously, the opportunities are limited in terms of what you can do. If you have 100, it might open up a little bit. You have a million, opens up even more. So, I mean, the opportunities are immense, and every single country has their own unique proposition in terms of what they can offer. Ethiopia offers a couple of advantages as well as disadvantages. A couple of advantages: we have the lowest cost of power, I think, in the world. So anything around manufacturing, export oriented, the government has, given out a lot of resources and incentives for anybody that wants to come and invest in export oriented sectors, like manufacturing, textiles, apparel, shoes, that kind of stuff. Anything that you want to export out of Ethiopia, the government will bend over backwards to make sure that you succeed. So obviously the opportunities here are different from, let's say, Rwanda, where the market is only 6-7 million people, and you have to be really creative to make money in Rwanda. Whereas in Kenya, the competition is much stiffer, their industry is a little more ahead. So getting into a business will cost you a little more than it would in Uganda or South Sudan or Ethiopia. I think there's opportunities, unique opportunities everywhere. services, obviously, you know, we're developing, you know, a new African middle class. So like everywhere else, you know, what does the middle class want? You know, mm-hmm. they want better education for their kids. They want, you know, better healthcare. They want, you know, better products and services on their shelves. They want products served to them. They want, you know, better services for everything else that, you know, because they have money. So you want to get that money, you better come to them with you know, a different way of servicing them rather than the same way that they've been used to. So, you know, I think people need to look at what East Asia went through 30 years ago and then sort of try to replicate it and change it and make it into their respective market realities.
Hmm. I think that's really great advice. You gave us sort of a number of areas where people can get involved in. And I think the bandits is helpful for me, and I think it's helpful for the bandits as well. You touched a little bit on sort of the financing side of things, about how if you have 10,000 versus 100,000, your options are a little bit limited. But for those people who are coming back, who have very ambitious ideas of what they want to do, what advice can you give them in terms of maybe even finding capital, or how to start when they don't have enough capital for an idea that might be quite capital intensive?
I would say share. You know, and you know, I don't care who you are. I don't think you have enough resources. Or, you know, when we talk about resources, it's not just about money. It's about time and expertise as well, right? So
yeah.
I don't think any one person has every resource to do everything that they need to do. For me, you know, in the example of the TV station that we're launching, you know, I might have come up with the idea, but you know, I pulled together people that I felt would add value to that idea and share that idea, and then find investors to basically make it happen. So I'm happy to share the ideas and the fact that at least the job is getting done, the project is up and running, and I can actually see the TV on. You know, rather than me having the idea and just keeping it to myself and waiting until the time I raise enough money or have enough resources to get it done.
Yeah.
If I did that, I don't think I'd ever get this project done, right?
Yeah.
For me, I think a lot of people tend to do things themselves, and that's when they get caught up and not getting anything done. I think people need to be open to the idea of working together, of sharing ideas. I mean, look at, so, you know, if you look at the Valley, you know, Facebook wouldn't be where it is if Mark Zuckerberg just kept his idea to himself, you know? He went out and found funders and found people to make it happen, right? I think Africans need to do that. I think a lot of people have great ideas when they come back home, and people tend to be suspicious about sharing ideas in terms of getting it stolen or whatever. But I think there's always a group of people that are willing to sort of fund something. And, you know, there's always somebody in your city that has money and doesn't know what to do with it. And there's always somebody that has an idea but doesn't have the money.
So
it's just matching the two.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. Especially as a new entrepreneur, you find that you come up with an idea and you guard this idea so tightly. And some of the best advice someone gave me was telling me I would rather own 10% of something worth $100 million over owning 100% of something worth nothing.
Exactly. That's exactly. I mean, I always say, you know, I always use that analogy because a lot of the businesses that I'm in, whether it's in Ethiopia or beyond, are with partners. When I pick a partner, it's not just about the money. It's also that partner has to have something that I don't have, an expertise that I don't have, a resource that I don't have, a network that I don't have, whatever it may be. So I can't expect to go to Ghana and do everything on my own. I'll find somebody local who knows the local people and the local market and the local resource and you know, do something with him. I might get 10, 15, 20%, but at least it's getting done, right? So for me, it's I'd rather have 10 different things where I have 10 to 15% or 20% shares, at least at 100% of something, right? And you also diversify your risk.
I think that's really good advice in terms of finding a diverse pool of talent and finding people who fill in the gaps where you're lacking, because like this whole idea that you're getting at is no one person has all of the skills. So you find other people, partner with other people who make up for what you lack in.
Great advice. Always hire people smarter than you.
Yes. I think that's wonderful advice that we hear from some of the top entrepreneurs everywhere. Yeah. And when you first started your business, we can even talk about the radio station and then your 251 Communications. How did you go about starting that in terms of raising capital? Was it bootstrapped initially?
I mean, with the radio station, it was finding a partner that had the resources, capital. and then know how to make it work. I've never run a radio station or managed one. All I knew was that there was a need for it in the market, and I found a partner that basically had the resources to make it happen, but just didn't have the idea on how to put it together. So I put it together and went for it. In regards to 251, it was essentially the same thing. You had a huge number of multinationals coming to the market. You only had one or two advertising agencies, and obviously, if you're working with Coke, you can't work with Pepsi. If you're working with Nokia, you can't work with Samsung. So the brands were looking for alternative agencies to work with, and it was just about timing and you know, going for it. For me, if my gut says go for it, I do. I'm more than happy to fail. I just don't want to, you know, regret anything. I don't want to sit around 30 years from now and go, I wish I had done this, I wish I had done that, and that's not me. You know, I'd rather fail 100 times.
And I think that's sort of a good trait to have as an entrepreneur. But how did you develop that thick skin to say you didn't care whether you failed, you just wanted to get out there and try?
Man, you know, to be honest with you, I think you know, some people are just born to take risks. But then some people are just, you know, weary about taking risks, and they're just happy, you know, having a job and a steady paycheck, you know, every 2 weeks or whatever it is. I mean, not everybody's an entrepreneur, and that will never happen. But I think, you know, from a very young age, I always try to find new ways of making money or finding a solution to problems. So
yeah,
I think it was, for me, you know, if I wasn't doing this, then there's nothing else I'd rather be doing, to be honest with you. So I you know, my biggest high is doing something new. It's not about the money, and you know, it's not about, you know, and I'm not a detailed guy, to be honest with you. For me, I get excited from coming up with an idea and making it happen, and that makes me, you know, the happiest ever.
Wow. And I would say that I'm much like you in those respects. I'm more of the idea person, but can you give maybe one or two actionable steps for people who are the idea people and not quite detail-oriented? How can they bring their products to life or bring their services to life?
Find someone that's exactly opposite you. Find someone that, you know, is not an idea person, but an execution person. Find someone who's an operations guy. Find someone that's, you know, loves detail. There's people that just will sit there and you know, come up with a 44-page PowerPoint in terms of how they're going to execute something. Those are the people that just get into details and execution and operations. And I'm the opposite. So find your match in that regard. And I've been able to do that in all of my businesses, is find someone that's basically into making the vision happen.
I think that's really great. Find someone who picks up in what you're lacking. And we're going to move a little bit into getting to know you as an entrepreneur. So what fires you up in the morning? What's your morning routine, and why is that routine so important to you?
My morning routine, I mean, for me, you know, I'm lucky, especially now, if I get, you know, 4 or 5 hours sleep, which is not healthy. you know, I'm trying to find that balance between, you know, work and life and family. So, you know, I'm still working on that aspect of it. But to be honest with you, you know, lately, you know, I promised my family that I'm going to get in shape. So I'm in the gym, you know, 6:30 in the morning. And then it just clears up your mind, gives you a bit of energy to, you know, focus on the rest of the day. Yeah. I like to spend the first hour and a half in my office just going through emails and just communicating and letting clients know what's going on or staff know. And then the rest of the day is actually spent on you know, building new business and you know, putting out fires and that kind of stuff, and building the network, because my business is built on people and you know, introducing myself to people and, you know, meeting people and talking to people and figuring out what's going on in the market and what's new. So that, you know, that takes up a lot of my time. In terms of the operational side, we have an operations people. We have 2-3 people that are into operations, so I don't worry about the day-to-day running of the office. My job is basically the big picture thing.
Okay. Yeah. And so a big part of entrepreneurship we see is being able to generate revenue. So can you share a few ways that you bring in income from the different businesses that you have?
So we're like essentially a 360 agency as 251. So we make money in 5-6 different ways. There's research we do, consumer research. So companies will come to us and say, you know, I'm trying to get into this kind of business. Can you find out who else is doing it? What their pricing range is, what people are willing to pay for it, what they like, and so forth and so on. So we have that part of the business. We have the branding aspect of it in terms of design, logo, coming out with a creative way of selling as a product and our service. We have the PR aspect of it in terms of the PR relations side. We handle PR for Emirates, Western Union, the Gates Foundation, Coca-Cola, some of the biggest names on the ground. So we're essentially the custodian of the brand. So, you know, very careful in terms of how we handle those brands. And then we also have the media side where we essentially strategize and place media and buy media on behalf of clients. And then we also have a business consulting side where we give consulting advice for companies or individuals interested in coming to the market and introducing them to people and handling some of the legal aspect of it and, you know, government relations, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, my job, you know, is always on the lookout in terms of maximizing in each and every single department and also looking out for other opportunities such as TV or anything else that we can think of to maximize revenue.
Wow, it seems like you guys are doing quite a bit, and it sounds very exciting. And
that's fun.
Yeah. And how did you land some of these really large clients that you have?
To be honest with you, a lot of the clients come through word of mouth. So, I mean, you know, as an advertising agency, you know, we don't go out and knock on doors and say we can do this and that for you. It's usually when you work with a brand like Coca-Cola, everybody else pays attention. When you work with a brand like Diageo or Western Union or Nokia or Microsoft or whatever, you know, the other major multinational brands always pay attention in terms of, you know, who you work with and what you do. Your work speaks for itself. So that's how we've been able to build a business.
Wow. And how large is the team that you're working with now?
We have about 25 people on the team. And we expect to grow substantially over the next couple of years.
Yeah. And you've mentioned the TV station that you're starting. What sort of sparked that?
Actually, after the radios, this is about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I actually thought of TV, at least in the Ethiopian market, because now Ethiopia is a little bit behind in terms of the media business and the entertainment business. So I always thought that, you know, there'd be a need for it, and I always knew that there'd be a need for it. And the middle class is growing, and people are, you know, beginning to spend money. The first, you know, disposable income money that people have is usually a TV set is the first thing that people buy. So in that regard, you know, people need a choice in terms of what they're able to watch. I think in North America and the U.S., you have 80, 100 channels. You guys are spoiled with choice, whereas here, people have maybe 3, 4, or 5 different local channels that they can pick from. So it was, you know, it was just... You know, it just made sense, you know, to give people a different choice in terms of entertainment.
I sort of like this whole theme is you notice problems, you notice where there are gaps, and you just work to fill those gaps.
That's basically it. I mean, the first person that built the chairs basically got tired of sitting on the floor. That's how I feel. So that's how it works.
Yeah. And I know as an entrepreneur that you've probably experienced some low points, especially moving back from here to Ethiopia in terms of getting your business started up. But I want you to take us to one specific moment that sticks out in your mind more than most of a challenging moment that you face as an entrepreneur.
I think in the Ethiopian context, I mean, for me, you know, Africa, especially Ethiopia, and I'm sure it's the same in most markets, you know, it's who you know that matters. You know, your network matters. You know, it's, so for me, having been, you know, gone from this market for most of my life, I don't have a network or a base to start from. So that was, you know, that was the biggest challenge, you know. that in high school friends that I grew up with that are now, you know, CEOs or you know, and sitting in multinational organizations that I could tap into. I think for a lot of the local guys, that's been the biggest advantage because they've grown up here and they know the key people that they need to know. So to come into this market and build a network from scratch, I think that was the biggest challenge. But also, I think my second challenge is the first time there was FM radio license bid. I actually thought we were going to get one of the licenses, and I think we got shortlisted from about 14 companies to about four for two licenses. So we had a 50% chance, and I think that was the time my father bought a champagne bottle, thinking we'd won, and we lost. I think that was the lowest point ever. I think I ran away to DC from my sister's house for about 2 weeks and never left the house. So I've been there, it's a lesson learned. I mean, it's just the way it is. And you look at it, kids learn how to play soccer by falling down and getting kicked and digging and all of that. You can't learn soccer by sitting down and watching it on TV.
I think that's a great attitude to have. You have to understand that there are going to be those low points. There are going to be those challenges. One thing I always hear from people is that entrepreneurship is not as easy as they thought it was going to be. I mean, everyone understands it's going to be challenging, but I think they underestimate the challenge and the grit it takes to continuously push on a door that feels like 10 people are pushing back on.
Definitely. It's lessons learned, basically. That's basically it. I mean, if you look at the kids, I have two kids, so watching them and learn how to walk, that's basically what it is. I mean, they learn from every step, every fall, every balance. And that's how life is. That's how business is.
And you touched on this a little bit, but what do you think are some of the challenges that people trying to start businesses in Ethiopia don't realize?
It's a very old country. We were never colonized, so there's no system, that we follow. I mean, we're creating it as we go. All right, so things take time. Bureaucracy is, cumbersome and painful sometimes. You have different challenges every day, just like the conversation we were having earlier that got cut off by the power outage, internet, comes off and on, whatever. So, I mean, every day is different. Every day is a challenge, I would say, So you have to be very creative and very ingenious in terms of how you survive in this market. So I think for a lot of people that come from North America or Europe or whatever, that are used to, a certain way of operations and, everything, things that you take for granted and, not available. You can wake up in the morning and not have any water to take a shower. So you just have to think ahead and have a major, huge tank so that you could have reserved water. So, I mean, it's just very simple things in terms of how you go around it. But, I mean, I've been here 15 years, so I've seen a lot of change and a lot of development. And, there's still a long way to go, but I think things have changed drastically and moved in a very positive way. I wouldn't be here otherwise. I mean, I always tell people that, I have two very young kids, and I don't expect them to immigrate anywhere. I expect them to finish school here, college here, and work here and die here. That's basically, that's my goal, and I hope God makes that happen.
Yeah.
If they ever leave this place, I want them to be as a tourist, not as an immigrant.
I think that's a really great thing.
No, I mean, I think it's a different world. I mean, obviously, we're a global country where my kids are going to be global anyway. I mean, they have cousins all over the world that they see on Skype almost on a weekly basis. So it's not like the way we grew up some 30 years ago where, you had to call someone and say, I'm going to call you next week at 5 o'clock. So they said, by the phone. So, life has changed, right?
So
I don't think they're going to be closed off from the rest of the world, to be honest with you. I think they're more connected in ways that we can ever imagine. So, I totally don't, I don't think that my kids would have to travel to North America to get the best education. I think, in 10 years' time, you could go to any university you want right from here.
That's great. And sort of on the other side of things, what is the best moment as an entrepreneur that you've experienced in Ethiopia? I'm sure there are many, but one that sticks out just a little bit more than the rest in your mind.
I don't know. I think it's the day we launched the radio station and heard the first song on the airwaves, and me driving around town and just, listening to it. I think that was just a different high. I think, especially if you've been working for something for so long, you actually see it happen. I think it gives you the fuel you need to go after the next thing, right?
Yeah, I think that's great. Whenever we're able to put our hard work in and we see the benefit and we see other people enjoying the product, I think that's oftentimes some of the sweetest taste that an entrepreneur can get.
Yeah, I mean, basically that's what it is. I mean, it's sort of like watching your kid graduate from college. You have the hard work and you're whatever. So I mean, for me, it's, everybody has their own way of celebrating achievements. I think for me, it's having an idea and making it happen. That's for me, that's the biggest high.
Wow. And with that, we're about to enter the rapid fire round. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Go for it.
All right. What was initially stopping you from taking the step to become an entrepreneur?
Money.
And how did you push past that?
Found someone that had it, and someone that was willing to work with me.
Very, very pragmatic. I like it. Step one, step two. And at what point did you stop looking at your business as a project and more as an actual business?
I think it was about 3 years after we started that we realized that we're not a startup anymore. We're actually an entity.
And what quality do you have as an entrepreneur that most contributes to your success?
Networking. I'm a crazy networker. I go out of my way to meet people and make them feel comfortable. I try to understand people's problems and I always try to find solutions for them. I think that's, a lot of clients come to you looking for solutions rather than more problems, right?
And a lot of people out there I know find networking to be challenging, and sometimes they're intimidated at the process of networking. But can you give them just one or two words of encouragement?
I'll give you simple advice that my brother-in-law gave me once when I was meeting with, Vodacom in South Africa. I was going to pitch for a mobile license here in Ethiopia for us to become partners. And I was really nervous about the pitch, and he basically said, dude, they're not going to beat you up, and they're only going to say is no. Know what I mean? The worst is going to be no, and that's not going to kill you, so go for it.
I think
the worst thing you're going to do is fail. That's not going to kill you.
Yeah, and in fact, most of the time, failure is the best learning experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what quality do you wish to improve on most as an entrepreneur?
Financials. I think I need to keep I need to keep an eye on financials. I'm a big risk taker, so I need to make sure that there's continuity in terms of my business. So what happens to a lot of businesses in Africa, especially family-owned businesses and so forth, they don't continue on to the next generation. So for me, the next couple of years, it's going to be making this entity and everything else that I work with or on be able to withstand, anything that happens, and also be able to, be there for the second and third generation, sort of like the GEs and the Fords of the world.
And what's the best advice you've ever received, and who was it from?
I think the best advice I received was from a very good friend of my father's, I think about 12 to 13 years back, who basically said, in a place like Ethiopia, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. You need to diversify and then find 3-4 different ways of generating revenue, because you never know what happens. So, if you're an importer and all of a sudden there's no hard currency, then, you're screwed, right? So you need to find 3-4 different ways so that you can sort of, minimize your risks. Diversify your risk in that sense. So if one business fails or is not doing so well, the other one is actually making you some money.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, diversification. What advice would you give to a young you just starting out?
I think for me, take a risk, go for it. A lot of people have a lot of ideas that they, kills them inside, and that, they're burning to move forward. Take that first step, you know, have a 2 week plan, have a 2 month plan, have a, you know, 6 month plan, have a 1 year plan and execute. I mean, take one step at a time. Yeah. Don't be afraid, you know, and always spend time with people that are smarter than you, that are more experienced than you, because you never learn otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Always have to push yourself, put yourself in situations where you have to learn more, where you have to sort of demand more from yourself. It's the only way you'll grow.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what is one internet resource or application that you couldn't live without, excluding Google?
WhatsApp.
And I think that's in line with your strength, is you said your strength is networking and communication.
Yeah. I live on WhatsApp, and everybody knows that. I mean, you can say, you know, how else can you talk to 10 people in 10 different places at the same time? You know, there's a lot of applications there. But for me, I mean, at least in the Ethiopian context, I mean, WhatsApp has just been an amazing platform. There's other platforms as well, but, you know, it's an amazing communication tool. For me, it's something that I live on.
That's great. And to close out the round, do you feel like you've made it?
No, man, I feel like I'm just like a 5% of where I should be.
Wow. And you've been an entrepreneur for how long?
I'm a true entrepreneur probably maybe 8 years.
Wow. And I think that's something we've seen, whether the person is starting out yesterday, whether you've been in business for 20 years, I've not heard anyone say they feel like they've made it yet.
No, the day you do that, man, you're dead. Might as well just retire and give it up.
Yeah. Wow. And I think that was a great rapid fire round. And now we're just going to cool down a little bit. And I'd like to ask, what book would you recommend to the bandits who are listening right now?
Read Steve Jobs' biography.
Okay. And any particular reason? What was so captivating about it for you?
I mean, the dude fell down so many times. I mean, you know, it takes a different kind of person to, you know, to start a company, lose it to somebody else, get fired from his own company, and then come back and make it what it is. Right?
Yeah.
I think it's a different kind of skill, different kind of resources, just a different kind of mentality.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you really believe in your own product and your own service, anything's possible, right? But
yeah.
I mean, for me, I love to read biographies only because, you know, you learn something from people.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. And for those of you listening, I'll put a link on Addis's page on the website, on the Knowledge Bandits website, where you can find the book and other resources that he's mentioned throughout the podcast. And who are your mentors right now? And what would you say is the value of mentorship in general?
You know, I whether you're in high school, junior high, college, or just starting your professional life, I mean, you know, it all depends where you are in life. Everybody needs a mentor. Whether it's somebody in the family, whether it's somebody professional, whether it's a teacher, a principal, whoever. You know, I always believe in hanging out with people that are smarter than you and have more experience. So I'm always on the lookout for, you know, for people that I can learn from.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law, my sisters, you know, somebody that has more experience and has just done tremendous work. My brother-in-law is the same. You know, I try to spend as much time with them as possible, trying to, you know, just even in normal conversations and just even observing what they do and what they say, I learn from. And, you know, I'm blessed now in the fact that my network has grown, and the African Leadership Network is obviously a huge network that I'm blessed to be a part of, and there's a huge amount of people that basically you read about that you can hang out with over a couple of days during the forum. And so I've built, you know, solid partnerships and friendships with folks in that network that, you know, basically fuel my fire for the year.
And I think that's in line with everything that you've been talking about throughout this entire podcast, is surrounding yourself with people who are smarter than you, people who know things that you don't know. That's the only way you're going to be elevated to another level.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And what advice would you give to those people listening who know they should take a step, but they're just afraid to make that move?
There's only one life to live, man. This is not a practice run.
I like that. there's only one life to live. This is not a practice round. That's the first time I've heard that, and I'm going to say it again over and over again throughout this podcast.
It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so, I mean, today's not coming back, so, you know, every day that they're wasting, every day that they're thinking about not doing anything about whatever they're thinking about, this, you know, it'll never come back. So time is the most expensive commodity ever.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And as we say goodbye, for those listeners who have just been particularly inspired by all the work that you're doing and everything that you said, how can they get in touch with you for internship opportunities or maybe even mentorship opportunities?
Yeah, they can email me. You can, you know, free to share my email with them, and, you know, they can email me. I have a ton of people, especially from Ethiopia and the region, that come down and talk to me for an hour or two. I have interns that come and spend the summer with us. And I'm more than happy to always share knowledge or whatever little that I have or experience with, you know, with kids that are coming up. And it's a beautiful thing. I love to see people succeed.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's amazing, is this idea of entrepreneurs who are moving back, starting things, and also giving back to sort of fuel the next generation of entrepreneurs.
Yep. Yeah. That's it. I mean, Africa needs entrepreneurs. We don't need anything else. We don't need NGOs. We don't need development aid. We need entrepreneurs. We need jobs. We got, you know, millions of youth that, you know, I need jobs. So no government is going to provide jobs for all of the citizens. So it's got to be businesses.
I like that. And as we leave, as we say goodbye, unfortunately, we have one final question that I ask. So you're tasked with building the greatest business the world has ever seen. You can bring on any two people, living or dead. With you taking the lead, who would you bring on and what would you do?
Wow, that's a tough one. Living or dead, that's a tough one in terms of business. Oh, man. I'd bring a Aliko Dangote, man. That's the brother that would, you know. That I would love to, you know, to work with someone like that, because you know, he's doing it right now, right here. I think if I brought somebody that was dead, they wouldn't know, recognize the Africa that we live in.
Interesting.
You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want someone that sees the vision of the new Africa with me.
And you get one more pick.
I think President Paul Kagame. Yeah, he's a visionary, man. I mean, he saw Rwanda in 94, and I was just there last year, so if somebody can do that for a country, imagine what he can do for a company.
Wow, yeah, that's very true. And that's the dream team, people. Aliko Dangote, Paul Kagame with...
we could take over the world. Imagine that tag team. Lord.
Yeah,
we could take over the world.
Yeah. Well, Addis, this has been an amazing experience for me, and I'm sure that the bandits also appreciate your time here.
Oh, thank you very much, man. Yeah, you know, I'm happy to share, and, you know, good luck with everything. And, you know, 20 years from now, I hope something that somebody heard on this conversation, you know, adds value to what they're doing.
Yes, definitely. Stay inspired.
All right, man. You too, brother. Thank you.
This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast. We want to thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Overcast, or Stitcher. You can also follow Knowledge Bandits on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And as always, Bandits, stay inspired.